Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 38. Text 15. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Atha Bhavruta Sapadishayo Ritat Pradana Pum Sosh Charanam Swalabdaye Diadritam Yogivir Apyaham Dhruvam Namasya Abhyam Jasakin Vanaukasa. Then I will at once alight from my chariot and bow down to the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Theirs are the same feet that great mystic yogis striving for self-realization bear within their minds. I will also offer my obeisances to the lotus, to the Lord's cowherd boyfriends, and to all the other residents of Vrindavan. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Taksur Unmulitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Vanshakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevaja Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivas Adi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. So there's a term that I read in the Bhakti Sandarbha called Siddho Pradesh. What does that literally mean, Siddho Pradesh? Yeah.
Perfected instructions.
Instructions also that lead to perfection. And what Jiva Goswami described, he described that there's three categories of knowledge. I think in really almost any philosophical system, I explained this, a conception of reality, and how do you affirm that it's true? What is your means for realizing that truth? And what is the result or experience of doing so? So those three categories are called Sambandhagyan, Abhidhayagyan, and Piyojanagyan. Of the three, Sambandhagyan is the most prominent. Maybe we can say even the most important. Of course, without a goal, you can't have a practice. But the point Jiva Goswami made is, if you are fixed in Sambandhagyan, then automatically Abhideya and Piyojana will come. And he gave the example of a treasure. The most important thing in getting a treasure is having the knowledge or understanding where it is. Then that automatically inspires you to dig for the treasure and to enjoy the result, which is the treasure itself. So in the same sense, when you have a firm basis of Sambandhagyan, then these other things come more naturally. And therefore, I think Hari Prasad can maybe give a better, about 80% of the Bhagavatam is Sambandhagyan. Is that reasonable to say? Yeah, so most is that. And really, that's really, ladies, move up. It's so we have room in the back and people can come up. And that's really what Prabhupada taught us, to get that firm foundation. I was thinking of Bhurijan Prabhu when he really deeply wanted to study the 10th canto, and he was going back to reside in Perth after staying mostly in Vrindavan. And he really wanted the 10th canto, so he started at the first. And really, for years, studied it. And got to the 10th canto. And now I see in the Govardhan retreat, he's speaking a lot of Leela. Because he has the Adhikari. So I think similarly in my class, the first part had sufficient Sambandhagyan, metaphysical understanding. So I feel comfortable today to mostly discuss Leela or Rasa. There's two ways in which you can study the Bhagavatam. For tattva, for understanding, or to relish your relationship with Krishna. This point I was very, very startling, but I actually had the fortune that a friend of mine who was a Sanskrit scholar translated the Bhakti Sandarbha for the first time in English and was kind enough to give me a copy of that translation before it was ever published. And it had so many interesting insights by Jiva Goswami. So he analyzed the second verse in the Bhagavatam. And the second verse in the Bhagavatam says that when you hear about Krishna, then immediately, without delay, Krishna appears within your heart. Not only when you hear it, but just once. If you hear the Bhagavatam just once, Krishna appears in your heart. And then Jiva Goswami, as a great Vaishnav, but also a great Vaishnav scholar, asks the question that an intelligent person should ask. Why doesn't that happen to me? And his answer is very interesting, and I'll give it in summary, and it's relevant to today, that we don't hear things, we don't hear instructions that we don't like. And the essence of the Bhagavatam is to surrender to Guru and Krishna. And we don't like that. We like it, but not really fully. Those of you on my Monday morning greetings, you can go to wavesofdevotion.com. I wrote an article on this called Surrender is Not a Bad Word. Because the Vaishnav concept of surrender is like a child in the arms of their mother, fully sheltered and happy to be there. Happy that there's a shelter, someone who is vastly superior in every way, who is holding me in their arms. But Jiva Goswami said that when you read the Bhagavatam again and again and again, you become purified. Nasta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata seva. Those things are inauspicious, go. And then Sharanagati. You take shelter. You open the door. And when you do that, that's when real bhakti happens and you awaken your relationship with Krishna. And then you read the Bhagavatam in a bit of a different way. Not to get instructions, just to get instructions, but to relish your relationship with Krishna. And then you can really realize the import of the third verse of the Bhagavatam. Nigama kalpataro galitam sukha mukat amrita dravya bibita bhagavatam rasam aliyam. Bibita bhagavatam. You can then drink the Bhagavatam. You can actually relish the Bhagavatam. This morning, I was going over the verses that I was going to speak on. I had just a little tiny realization of this after going over the stories, going over the subject, and then at the end, the rasa, the lila. So what I will do today is I will go over the remaining verses and will relish the lila in another way. Of course, it's a Akura lila, but now Akura's lila. Not just us relishing Akura's lila, but Akura relishing the lila or the pastimes of Krishna personally. So I'll just go by verse, and I think we'll relish it. So now he says, I'll get off my chariot. We discussed this yesterday. And again, imagine his aspirations and imagine his expectations and imagine what he actually feels when he gets there. Now he's still in his aspirations. He's meditating. So I'll hold Krishna's feet and then I'll offer my obeisances to the Lord's cowherd boyfriends and all the other residents of Vrindavan. And always there's a very significant word that even those of us who don't know Sanskrit, like myself, still know cha also. And that's an ecstatic thing because the residents of Vrindavan and to the friends and to the residents of Vrindavan, everything in relationship to Krishna, including, according to the Damodar Astakam, we pay our obeisances to the rope which tied Krishna's waist. Everything in relationship to Krishna. And now he's envisioning that ecstasy. And when I have fallen at his feet, the Almighty Lord will place his lotus hand upon my head. Now his aspirations are rising, more and more intimate. Now his hand will on my head. For those who seek shelter in him, because they are greatly disturbed by the powerful serpent of time, that hand removes all fear. Wow. When will that day be mine? Krishna's hand, Pasik, his lotus hand on my head. The serpent of time. I love this Sanskrit word for serpent, Bhujanga. It means one whose limbs are hands, right? No? Whose hand is his only limb, because a snake doesn't have legs. His hand is his only limb. The little. So the and the serpent of time. Wow. The serpent of time. Kala. Ujanga. Ramasabha, the swift force of the serpent of time. And the fear is gone. Just like when we travel, there's always anxiety, right? Will the car pick me up? Will my luggage be there? Waiting on the rotunda when the luggage is coming, and then somehow others are coming first. And will my luggage be there? Will someone be there to pick me up? What to speak of going to Mayapur on that road? And when I get there, we don't know. But when Krishna puts his hand on your head, you know. You know. Devotee, that means connection with Krishna, there's no fear because we know our destination. And what we are doing now in devotion, and the person who is serving Krishna does not end with the body. The material designations, the false ego, that person, the person with the ambitions, the person with the fears, the person who identifies with the body, that's fear. But when you identify with the soul, by serving Krishna, you become fearless. Had a small realization of this. We all have our trials by fire. That's an English term. There's just some test in your life. Anybody have a trial by fire? Yeah, okay. And I, you know, my world was moving rapidly against my desires. And that's what, you know, tragedy, you know, something goes wrong. I lost my cell phone. I got a toothache. These are things. But sometimes you're uprooted from your home. You lose your positions. There's a break in relationship. There's very difficult things that happen. And that's when you start screaming because you have no hope of controlling it. So I was in a situation like that. And what do? As a devotee, I just took shelter of the holy name of Krishna. I was chanting and chanting and chanting and chanting. And then I had a slight realization. What I am doing, chanting, the mood I am doing it, and the person who is doing that, the devotee of Krishna, that will not end with the body. But the person who is doing this material activity and that material activity and that doing a material activity and a material consciousness and a material identity, that will end. So you become actually fearless. You become fearless. So he can't wait. He can't wait. When that hand will remove all fear and he's just meditating, Krishna's hand on my head. Now, as he had aspirations about the feet, now he's meditating on that hand. By offering charity to that hand, that lotus hand, Purandara and Bali earn the status of Indra, king of heaven. So just a meditation on that hand, a little service to that hand. What do you attain? How great is that? And during the pleasure pastimes of the rasa dance, when the Lord wiped away the gopis' perspiration and removed their fatigue, the touch of their faces made that hand as fragrant as a sweet flower, sugandhika. And the commentators say that that's the supreme personality of lotus. A lotus flower that grows in Manasarovara. That's extremely fragrant. And now, Krishna's hand becomes fragrant because after the rasa dance, he wipes away the perspiration. In other words, the hand of Krishna removes fatigue and gives intense bliss. And now he's just meditating on that hand and the fragrance of that hand, the hand that wiped the fatigue of the gopis, their perspiration. So his aspirations just continue to increase. The infallible Lord will consider me an enemy, even though King Kamsa has sent me here as his messenger. After all, will not consider me as an enemy, because he's worried that when you represent someone, then it's expected that you carry their qualities. And we all expect that. So he's the representative of Kamsa. But he said, the Lord will not consider me an enemy. He's a little bit concerned about that. Otherwise, he wouldn't mention it. But he'll not consider me an enemy. Why? Again, Achyuta. He's infallible. And his infallibility before was that his kindness never fails. His infallibility now is that his understanding and vision never fails. Because he says, after all, the omniscient Lord is the actual knower of the field of this material body, and with his perfect vision, he witnesses both externally and internally all the endeavors of the conditioned soul's heart. And this is a very important point, because not just negatively, but positively, the Lord sees not just what we do, but the consciousness in which we do it. Not just the paraphernalia we offer, but the heart in which that paraphernalia is offered. And he knows our heart. And this is actually the essence of bhakti. The essence of bhakti is to give Krishna pleasure, not by the things we give, but by the consciousness that they represent. Not that we just offer incense or a lamp, but we're offering our heart to Krishna. And he sees that. And one good example of this is when the wives of the Brahmins, when they were told by the cowherd boys that Krishna is nearby, and they went to Krishna like a river that flows to the sea. And that image is so beautiful, because if a river is flowing towards the sea and there's an obstacle, either it goes around it or it goes above it. You can't stop it. It's spontaneous. And then finally they see and perceive Krishna, and they have darshan. But the darshan is very interesting. The way the darshan is described is that actually Krishna saw their heart. And what did he see? Tyaktva sarva asha. This person, they're sincere. They gave up all other aspirations. And that reminds me of a story of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur when the Bagh Bazar Gaudiya Math was established in this beautiful temple. He had his room was on the other side of the temple. And every morning during Mangal Arati, he would take darshan, but without his glasses. And he couldn't see without his glasses. So they say, "What are you doing?" They asked him, some doubt. "Aren't you taking darshan in the morning?" He said, "No, darshan means I'm taking off my glasses, because what darshan means is we are presenting ourselves to God. God is seeing us." I know I like to go to this one temple in Vrindavan called Tatiyastan, where the sadhus live as they lived 500 years ago. And their first artik is about 10:30. After the guru worships the deities, then everybody goes. And I was speaking to them, and it was so important because it's an opportunity for the sadhus to, for Krishna to see their hearts. And that's Krishna's pleasure. And when we go before the deities, that is our service, to show Krishna our hearts in sincerity. And even if there are weaknesses, the consciousness that I'm offering my heart. So, thus he will cast his smiling, affectionate glance upon me as I remain fixed with joined palms, fallen in obeisances at his feet. Then all my contamination will be at once dispelled, and I will give up all doubts and feel the most intense bliss. So he has doubts, and what is his doubts? How will Krishna accept me? But now in his vision, Krishna will accept me. And then his vision, he'll not only accept me, but affectionately. I'll stand there with my hands folded and in obeisances, and he'll cast this glance. He'll express his heart to me through his glance and his smiles. And we can imagine what it would be like if Prabhupada walked in the room and you went up to him and he looked at you and he smiled at you and you can feel his affection for you through that. How would you feel? So, this is his, and he'll give up doubts. I know I was reading this commentary on the verse in the Bhagavatam. What is it? Vidyate Hridaya Grantis. What's the rest of it? That in this progress of bhakti, there'll become a time where the knot of false ego in the heart will be cut and all doubts will be gone. And I read a commentary on that, and there are two doubts that remain up until perfection. Will I be successful? Is it true? Is it true? Will I be? So he's saying now, then all doubts will be destroyed. And what doubts will be destroyed? Well, will Krishna recognize me? Will he recognize me? Recognize me as an intimate friend and relative. Krishna will embrace me with his mighty arms. So now I'll see the lotus feet, his hands. Now more intimate. He'll embrace me, instantly sanctifying my body and diminishing to nil all my material bondage, which is due to fruit of activities. Having been embraced by the all-famous Lord Krishna, I will humbly stand before him with bowed heads and joined palms, and he will address me, my dear Akura. At that very moment, my life's purpose will be fulfilled. Indeed, the life of anyone whom the Supreme Personality of Godhead fails to recognize is simply pitiable. Now, this is interesting because love, to really love, to really be, I don't know the word, to really be proven, it has to be words. Actions also. But love must manifest in words.
Tell me you love me. Tell me you love me.
And he'll speak, and he'll recognize him, and his head is bowed. He's humbly standing, and he'll address me, my dear Akura. And not only address me, but it will dress me very intimately and very affectionately. And life's purpose will be fulfilled. I had a very personal observation of that. In 1970, either 6 or 7, I think 1977, we were in Vrindavan. Not many devotees were in Vrindavan in those days. And I got woken up in the morning that Prabhupada is coming. Prabhupada was in Rishikesh recovering his health, and then his legs swelled up, and there was a storm, and the shutters were, Prabhupada thought, take me to Vrindavan. We just got this message, and Prabhupada was coming. And of course, everybody was madly cleaning and preparing. And then Prabhupada came, and we went in his room, and you can imagine at that time, all the devotees in the whole temple could fit in Prabhupada's room, comfortably. And then, I've told this before, but it was so memorable. And then Prabhupada said, well, you know, if one has to leave, let him come to Vrindavan. Everything is there, the white sands of Ramanreti, because near our temple, it was just all the white sands. I remember one time the Jamuna came all the way up to where that hospital is, the Bhaktivedanta Hospice, the Jamuna came up one year in the flood. That was all white sands. And he said, in the Jamuna, see, everything is here. And then he looked at us with realization, and he quoted a verse, and he looked at us, he said, but what is death but a change of body? And then he quoted, Deheno smin yatade he komaran yovanam jara tatade hantara praptir diras, as the embodied soul passes from boyhood to childhood to youth to old age, similarly at the time of death, the self-realized soul is not bewildered. And we saw that. We were there in the room when Prabhupada left, not bewildered. But there's another thing that he said that almost impressed me more. He started to talk about his disciple Jayananda. And he began to say, he helped me so much. He gave $5,000 to print the initial Nectar of the Rose, because Jayananda had just left the world. And Prabhupada was talking about him. So I just thought, wow. He made it into Prabhupada's heart that Prabhupada was remembering him and talking about him. So what a expectation to be recognized with affection by Krishna. The Supreme Lord has no favorite and no dearmost friend, nor does he consider anyone undesirable, despicable, or fit to be neglected. All the same, he lovingly reciprocates with his devotees in whatever manner they worship him, just as the trees of heaven fulfill the desires of whoever approaches him. So he's saying, Krishna will certainly reciprocate. Prabhupada gave three words that describe Krishna, and this is just an example of how Prabhupada's, so there's an English word called laconic from some history of some king. It means a lot of meaning in a few words. Prabhupada said, Krishna is responsive. And when he responds, it doesn't mean he's favoring one person or partial. He will respond to whoever surrenders to him. So if one person is getting more of Krishna's reciprocation and more, and less or none, it's not that he's partial to one or other. No, whoever comes, Krishna will reciprocate, just as the trees of heaven fulfill the desires of whoever approaches him. So it's not that, I'm not thinking, of course, thinking that Krishna is partial. Samaham sarvabhuteshu name dveshastinopra, that he hates or likes based on the false ego. No, Krishna's a person and he's responsive. I'm not imagining this. I'm giving my heart to him. Certainly he will reciprocate with me. And then Lord Krishna's elder brother, the foremost of the Yadus, will grasp my hands while I am still standing with my head bowed. And after embracing me, he will take me to his house. There he will honor me with all the items of ritual welcome and inquire from me about how Kamsa has been treating his family members. So now he's visioning Balaram, because Akur is related to Vasudev, Krishna's father, and he doesn't know yet that Vasudev is his father. So he's the son of Nanda Maharaj, or he's not so conversant in that. So he thinks Balaram will recognize me because I'm related to Vasudev. Sukadeva Goswami continued, "My dear king, while the son of Swapalka, traveling on the road, thus meditated deeply on Sri Krishna, he reached Gokula as the sun was beginning to set." Now, here's what's going to happen. You heard his expectations, and now here's what will happen. And as we'll see, what happens more than meets his expectations. And that's really bhakti. Because whatever you can imagine about the association of Krishna, it's much better. And Vaisheshika Prabhu made a comment about material things. They're never as good as you expect, and never as bad either. But we worry about them like so much. Never as bad, and never as good as we expect. But here, the expectations are going to be far more than his aspirations. Even though his aspirations were so ambitious, but that ambition was based on his spiritual consciousness of wanting Krishna. And not only wanting Krishna, but wanting more of Krishna. So now, here's what happens. In the cowherd pasture, Akrura saw the footprints of those feet whose pure dust the rulers of all the planets in the universe hold on their crowns. Those footprints of the Lord distinguished by such marks as the lotus, barley corn, and elephant goad made the ground wonderfully beautiful. So he saw not only Krishna's footprints, but he saw all the pastimes in the sand of Vrindavan. Because sometimes Krishna had a threefold bending form and that created one impression. Sometimes he was playing leapfrog with his friends and that created another impression. Sometimes his friends grabbed him by the arms and dragged him in the sand. So he was seeing all the pastimes of Krishna in the sands of Vrindavan. Increasingly agitated by ecstasy at seeing the Lord's footprints, his bodily hairs standing on end because of his pure love, and his eyes filled with tears, Akrura jumped down from his chariot and began rolling among those footprints, exclaiming, "Ah, this is the dust from my master's feet." Who's coming to Vrindavan after this? Well, we got quite a few people coming to Vrindavan. So that's the mood. Roll in the dust when you get to Vrindavan. And this is Udipan. Udipan is a division of one of the five emotional components that bring love of Krishna to rasa, or the height of one's love for Krishna. And those are the things. Udipan means like a match that it lights your love and these things in relationship to Krishna. So when he goes and he sees Krishna's actual footprints and the impressions of Krishna in the dust, it's like a match to his heart. And it's so powerful, and his mind becomes so increasingly agitated. Sambrahma, what does that mean? Sambrahma. Sambrahma. Agitation. Is there a derivative of the word, like a literal meaning?
Not a literal meaning. Sambrahma means agitation caused due to great respect.
To cause?
Due to great respect.
Great respect. Agitation brings you to great respect. So it's agitation caused by great respect. So that's interesting too, because agitation can be caused by a lack of great respect, which is usually our agitation with the idiot theme of a previous class.
So also means confusion and eagerness.
Yes. So it just, and what happens is, and this is described, is that then when that happens, another bhav arises, because it so agitates the mind, this respect, this love, that it affects the prana or life airs. And then the life airs become disturbed, and then somehow they contact the core material elements that create the body. So if it contacts the water element, then water begins to flow from the eyes. And when Lord Chaitanya was having these symptoms, it was described that the Ganga was practically flowing. There was so many tears. And if it contacts the air element, the hairs on the body stand on end. So now his love, which is there, his dasya rati, his love, servitude love, is now becoming dasya rasa. It's just being heightened. And then he jumps down from the chariot, and some people say it's maybe it could have been jumped down, but just as likely he fell down from the chariot. Because remember, he was still standing. He hadn't eaten yet. He hadn't drunk anything. He was still following. You know, he stayed up all night in a codicil, and he was standing on that chariot. And now he finally gets there. The very goal of life for all embodied beings is this ecstasy, which Akura experience when, upon receiving Kamsa's order, he put aside all pride, fear, and lamentation, and absorbed himself in seeing, hearing, and describing the things that reminded him of Krishna. And he put aside all pride and fear. Why pride? Because this is the king, and he is the chief advisor. And now he's rolling in the dust of the ground. You can imagine if one of the leaders of one of the powerful countries in the world came to Vrindavan
and rolled in the dust, giving up all pride and giving up all fear. Why fear? Because rest assured, Kamsa had spies everywhere. This is the way these fearful leaders work. They want to know what's happening. So rolling in that dust, knowing that if they see him worshiping the feet of Krishna, off with your head in a second. And this is actually very much bhakti at the higher level. It always startled me when I read this, that when Lord Chaitanya was with Prakasananda Saraswati and Prakasananda Saraswati, the great Mayavadi, and they saw Lord Chaitanya was in Varanasi, so he went where the Mayavadi sannyasis were, and he was just sitting where they washed the shoes, and then they saw this young, handsome sannyasi, and he came over to him, and he seemed so emotional, and they heard he just dances and chanted, so he was concerned for that that emotional state of the Mayavadi sannyasi, who should be like this, vairagya. Lord Chaitanya wasn't like that. And then when he questioned him about it, he said, well, you know, I had this problem and I went to my guru. And my guru said, by this chanting and hearing, I will see the lotus feet of Krishna. And then my guru looked me in the eyes, Ishvara Puri, and said, now I will tell you a verse that's the essence of the Bhagavatam. And Lord Chaitanya was sitting before him. Wow. A student of the Bhagavatam, the verse that's the essence of the whole thing. And then he quoted this verse, Evam Vratasva Priya Nama Krita Chitanara. In this way, referring to the previous verse that says, without attachment and without any inhibition, chant the holy name of your beloved Lord, like Narada Muni and Pancharatna. Without any attachment, without any inhibition, chant the name of your beloved Lord, Chitanurag, and from that comes these feelings. So, he put aside all inhibition, all pride, all fear, all lamentation, and absorbed himself in darshan, in shravanam, in hearing. Okay, now there's a very, now he sees Krishna. And before the verse, I'll describe what happens. So he gets there, and then Krishna had just come home from the forest because the prince was there of his feet. And what Krishna does, when Krishna goes to the forest, his mother, I told this before, she's a little disappointed because Krishna's her deity. And she wants to put on all the finest jewelry and the scents and you know, the guru, the scent and the sandalwood paste and so many. And Krishna, he's just going to the forest to play with his friends. He doesn't want all this jewelry. See, mother can't put on the jewelry. So Krishna go, and Krishna's, what's Krishna's decoration? The dust of Vrindavan. That's what Krishna's decoration is. So he wants that dust of Vrindavan. But when he comes back, he has to go to his house first to see his mother before they milk the cows. This is a big event. And this is where there's so many cows that the comment was made that as there are monkeys now all over Vrindavan, previously there were cows. And there were so many cows. So Krishna comes back, and then the people in their houses just see Krishna and Balaram walking by. Then his mother does her seva, her service, and she decorates him and puts on all the scents and jewelry. And then Krishna goes to milk the cows. And it's, you know, the cowherd men are there, the other cowherd boys,
And it's, you know, there's a lot of cows. And there's so many cows, and they're coming in groups, and milking one and then the other and letting them go. And then the buckets are clanging, banging. And, you know, Krishna has one job. The milk comes, and he takes the bucket, and he brings it. And he has responsibilities. And in that culture, children are under the authority of their parents. And they have chores. And if they don't do it, the parents say, oh! They have a way of raising the voice of authority that the child, oh! No. Don't play now. Don't play now. And then the child dials 911 and the police come. The police come and they take away the parents. But in those days, the parents had authority. But what happens when Krishna goes into the barn? And this is what Akura is seeing, because he's just looking at all this. He sees Krishna takes the bucket, and he starts dancing. And he got his flute, and he's dancing, and with Balaram, and it's so charming. And the buckets are clanging, and the milk is spilling, and Krishna is dancing. And what do the parents do? Navani Radha Nindita Kanti Param Rasa Sagara Nagara Bhupaparam Shubhamki Macharu Sikanda Sikam Braja Krishna Nidim Braja Raja. They're singing, they're dancing. The parents, Krishna's father and the cowherd boys, they're so ecstatic to see Krishna dancing and playing. And Akura is watching this. And from outside, his vision, we're going to see what his vision is. He sees Krishna walking. And the only thing he can describe it as the gait of a baby elephant. It's supposed to be the most graceful type of walk. And then he sees them as mountains. One sapphire and one silver. Krishna sapphire, Balaram silver, and their contrasting cloth. And he sees them as mountains. Why? Because when you see a mountain, it really stands out and it really absorbs your consciousness. I once went to the Himalayas. Never do it again. I just can't take those car rides where you look over the side and there's no railing. I had that experience. But the mountains, so they had that kind of presence. And what kind of mountains? Silver and sapphire. And he could, and then when he was out, he smelled Krishna. Because the mother put all this incredible oils on his body, and it was so beautiful. So here is the vision. Akura then saw Krishna and Balaram in the village of Vraj going to milk the cows. Krishna wore yellow garments, Balaram blue, and their eyes resembled autumnal lotuses. One of those two mighty Ambus, the shelter of the goddess of fortune, had a dark blue complexion, and the others was white. With their fine featured faces, they were the most beautiful of all persons. As they walked with the gait of young elephants, glancing about with compassionate smiles. So it's not just physical beauty, but they're sharing their hearts. Those two exalted personalities beautified the cowherd pasture with the impressions of their feet, which bore the marks of the flag, lightning bolt, elephant, goat, and lotus. The two lords, whose pastimes are most magnanimous and attractive,
will ornament with jeweled necklaces and flower garlands, anointed with auspicious fragrant substances, freshly bathed and dressed in spotless raiment. So this is what the mothers prepared them. They were the primeval supreme personalities, the masters and original causes of the universe, who had for the welfare of the earth now descended in their distinct forms of Keshava and Balaram. O King Parikshit, they resembled two gold-bedecked mountains, one of emeralds and the other of silver. As their effulgence, they dispel disguised darkness. Now, here's the time where he falls off the chariot. Because I think from before, he came now. He was in one place. Now he went to the cowshed. Akura, overwhelmed with affection, quickly jumped down from his chariot and fell at the feet of Krishna and Balaram like a rod. The joy of seeing the Supreme Lord flooded Akura's eyes with tears and decorated his limbs with eruptions of ecstasy. He felt such eagerness that he could not speak to present himself. He's so overwhelmed with emotion, he can't even speak. Recognizing Akura, Lord Krishna drew him close with his hand and embraced him. Krishna felt pleased, for he has always benignly disposed towards his surrendered devotees. And then what happens is Krishna and Balaram take him to their houses and they give him the reception that not only the devotee deserves, but an elder deserves. And you see the culture and the love. And they feed him and they give him herbs for sweetening his mouth and fragrances and flower gardens. And he was enjoying. And then they asked him about how their parents was. And honored by Nanda Maharaj with these true and pleasing words of inquiry, Akura forgot the fatigue of his journey. Now, the culmination. Let me see how quickly I can find it. Okay. Kuru was seated. He felt all his desires that he had contemplated on the road were fulfilled. What you want, you get if you're in relationship to Krishna, if your desire is pure, in terms of his association. So he gets it, and now what he does, he delivers the message. So I'm going to skip to the part of how the gopis felt when they got this message. And those feelings are the reason why God came to take the position of his devotees. And Lord Chaitanya, this is one of the pastimes in the Sisi that he meditated on. This pastime, the Rasa Leela pastime, Kurukshetra, as Hari Parshad gave that quote, he wants to relish the separation and the depth of that feeling where you're so madly overcome with thoughts of Krishna, you're seeing God everywhere, Krishna everywhere. So now this is how the gopis. So first what happens is Nanda Maharaj issues an order. He found out. Kamsa was very political. So he not only invited Krishna and Balaram, he knew he had to invite his father. And then said, you know, there's a big festival, you know, village people, they love to go to the city for the big festival. So that's Comps' strategy. We're going to have a big festival, and all the coward men are going to be very excited to come. And then Nanda Maharaj has the village constable make the announcement. You know, years ago, in the 10th anniversary of Vrindakund, they were going to serve a ghee feast to all the residents of Nandagram for the first time, like in 40 or 50 years, like a pure ghee feast. And how did everybody in the village find out? There's a village caller, and he goes on the, you know, Nandagram and says, "Tomorrow at 12, there will be a feast." And then how does it spread? Because it's a village. Hey, there's a feast. You heard about a feast? Feast, feast. Heard about it. They didn't need internet. I remember when I went to India and I came back, so many people in relationship to my mother wanted to meet me. Because she said, you heard about my son, my son, my son. The word gets around even without internet. Called village talk. So, hey, you heard what this person? This person did? It's a little village. He just, today we'll have a feast, all ghee. Oh, feast, ghee. Hey, the ghee. See, they had the same pleasure, but without the inebrieties of the technology, you can still talk Brijalpa. It's just limited. In an appropriate way. So he issued the order, and now this is what Lord Chaitanya came to experience. When the young gopis heard that Akrura had come to Vraj to take Krishna and Balaram to the city, they were extremely distressed. This is called Vyabhachari Bhav. There's five bhavas that combine together to bring rati or bhava or love for Krishna to rasa. Out of their love, why are they agitated? Out of their love, they're extremely agitated. Some gopis felt so pained at heart that their faces turned pale from the heavy breathing. Others were so anguished that their dresses, bracelets, and braids became loose. This is Satvika Bhav, involuntary actions coming. These emotions are coming, the bodily transformations. Other gopis entirely stopped their sensory activities and became fixed in meditation of Krishna. They lost all awareness of the external world, just like those who attain the platform of self-realization. These are all nice verses to speak elaborately on, but we don't have time for that. So they achieved the perfection of yoga. All other thoughts stopped except the object of their meditation, connected in intense love. And still, other young women fainted simply by remembering the words of Lord Shauri Krishna. Those words, decorated with wonderful phrases and expressed with affectionate smiles, would deeply touch the young girl's heart. Now they're remembering the words that were spoken. Just like when Krishna was in the coils of the Kaliya serpent, for hours, but 48 minutes that the gopis looked, and Krishna, they only see the top of his head, practically his peacock feather, and this snake is just back and forth. And then it used the phrase tapta dukam sunyam. Krishna is my life. Without Krishna, life is zero. Spiritual depression out of love. This is it. My life is finished. Krishna is my life. They have no other life. tapta dukkham. Put those two words together. Tapta means?
Burning.
And dukkham?
Anxiety.
Burning anxiety. You know how Prabhupada translated it? Tormented. Tormented. Tortured. So here also, they remember, and they remembered what? Their loving dealings, the smiling, the words. We have that even here in the world. Someone dear to us, you ever lost a loved one? You remember their qualities, the relationships you had with them, maybe the words. The gopis were frightened at the prospect of even the briefest separation from Lord Mukunda. This is death. They're terrified. What will happen to us if Krishna goes? So now, as they remembered his graceful gait, his pastimes, his affectionate smiling glances, his heroic deeds, and his joking words, which would relieve their distress, they were beside themselves with anxiety at the thought of the great separation that was about to come. Pravas. Did I get that right? Pravas, the third type of separation, for a long time. They gathered in groups and spoke to one another, their faces covered with tears and their minds fully absorbed in achyuta. They gathered in groups. So it's very interesting. It shows that they're chaste, but their chastity cannot control or inhibit their love for Krishna. It's just when Krishna comes back from the forest the first day and they see the paraduli, the dust, and then they hear the kirtan and then they see his face, then the gopis leave. Right? They can tell their husband, get away, I'll kill you. Move out of the way. I'm going to see Krishna. But they go in groups because they're chaste girls. And girls always go in groups in Vrindavan. The gopis said, O providence, you have no mercy. You bring embodied creatures together in friendship and love and then senselessly separate them before they fulfill their desires. This whimsical play of yours is like a child's game. Providence. Having shown us Mukunda's face, framed by dark locks and beautified by his fine cheeks, raised nose and gentle smiles, which eradicate all misery, you are now making that face invisible? This behavior of yours is not at all good. Oh, Providence, though you come here with the name Akrura, you are indeed cruel. Because Akrura means not cruel. What a joke. You're sending Akrura here. You have to name him Akrura? You have to name Akrura, not cruel? And this is what he's doing to us? Like what if the President of the United States was, by providence, his name was Lovable? It's just, though you come here with the name of Krura, you were indeed cruel. But like a fool, you were taking away what you once gave us, those eyes with which we have seen, even in one feature of Lord Madhavisa's form, the perfection of your entire creation? Just one thing? And you've taken him from us? Alas, Nanda's son, who breaks loving friendships in a second, will not even look directly at us. Forcibly brought under his control, we abandoned our homes, relatives, children, and husbands just to serve him. But he is always looking for new lovers. The dawn following this night will certainly be auspicious for the women of Mathura. All their hopes will now be fulfilled, for as the Lord of Vraja enters their city, They will be able to drink from his face the nectar of the smile emanating from the corner of his eyes. When the Dashahas, Bhojas, Andakas, Vrishnis, and Satpatis see the son of Devaki and Mathura, they will certainly enjoy a great festival for their eyes, as will all those who see him traveling along the road to the city. After all, he is the darling of the goddess of fortune and the reservoir of all transcendental qualities. He who is doing this merciful deed should not be called a krura. He is so extremely cruel that without even trying to console the sorrowful residents of Raja, he is taking Krishna away, who is more dear to us than life itself. Hard-hearted Krishna has already mounted the chariot, and now the foolish cowherds are hurrying after him in their bullock carts. Even the elders are saying nothing to stop him. Today, fate is working against us. The elders, they should be advising him. And what is providence? Now the elders are assisting this all. Let us directly approach Madhava and stop him from going. What can our family and elders and other relatives do to us now? Now that fate is separating us from Mukunda, our hearts are already wretched. We cannot bear to give up his association for even a fraction of a second. So what can be worse than separation from Krishna? Our reputations? Who cares about our reputations? The pain of separation from Krishna is 1,000 times more powerful than us losing our reputations. When he brought us to the assembly of the Rasa dance, where we enjoyed his affectionate and charming smiles, his delightful secret talks, his playful glances and his embraces, we passed many nights as if they were a single moment. Oh, gopis, how can we pass over the insurmountable darkness of his absence? How can we exist without Ananta's friend Krishna, who in the evening would return to Vraja in the company of the cowherd boys, his hair and garland powdered with the dust raised by the cow's hooves? As he played his flute, he would captivate our minds with his smiling glances. Sukadeva Goswami said, after speaking these words, the ladies of Vraja, who were so attached to Krishna, felt extremely agitated by their imminent separation from him. They forgot all shame and loudly cried out, Govinda Damo Dara Madhaveti, 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 Govinda Damo Dara Madhaveti. Okay, three more verses. Listen carefully. But even as the gopis cried out in this way, Akura, having at sunrise performed his morning worship and other duties, began to drive the chariot. Led by Nanda Maharaj, the cowherd men followed behind Lord Krishna in their wagons. The men brought along many offerings for the king, including clay pots filled with ghee and other milk products. There's actually a few more. With his glances, Lord Krishna somewhat pacified the gopis, and they also followed behind him for some times. Then, hoping he would give some instructions, they stood still. As he departed, that best of the Yadus saw how the gopis were lamenting, and thus he consoled them by sending a messenger with his loving promise, "I will return." Sending their minds after Krishna, the gopis stood as motionless as figures in a painting. They remained there as long as the flag atop the chariot was visible, and even until they no longer could see the dust raised by the chariot wheels. The gopis then returned back without hope that Govinda would ever return. Full of sorrow, they began to spend their days and nights chanting about the pastimes of their beloved. Srila Prabhupada ki. Okay. It's just some reflections. Krishna Kshetra Maharaj, the mic.
Well, just from this almost last verse that you read, I'm wondering why the gopis felt no hope just after Krishna said, "Ayasye, I will return." After all, it's Krishna speaking. Are they doubting Krishna's promise?
Well, I just could say something about that, but
there's one verse, in the Gita where Krishna, it's in Manmanabha Madbhakto, and then twice in the verse, Krishna says, "I promise." So they say this would be a literary discrepancy. But the reason it's mentioned twice, why Krishna says, I promise, the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, because everyone knows that Brijbasis are liars.
Well, going back to Akrura seeing the footprints of Krishna, you mentioned that this is Uddipana. This is, what is it? Impetus. It is inspiration. You said like a match. And I guess I'm wondering, it's evidence of Krishna's presence. So we have this kind of his anticipation to see Krishna is super intense, and in that intensity he recognizes now with the footprints that yes, Krishna is present, so much so that he, as you say, possibly falls down off the chariot. I'm thinking about absence and presence, absence, and then the imprints of the feet are somewhere in between. So I guess I'm wondering whether Uddipana are always like this. Are they always somewhere between absence and presence of the Lord?
No, Uddipana could also be presence. Mm-hmm. In other words, because in the Bhagavatam, in the Krishna book, there's also this sense of the Leela coming to rasa. So if they see Krishna's smile, that's also in the deep end. Okay. If they see Krishna's cloth, and they see his smiling face, mm-hmm. they're also in the deep end.
Okay,
it's
Krishna's like, also there.
Okay, Pancharatna?
Very extraordinary. It struck me how the contrast between the extraordinary experience of Akrura, whose wishes were entirely fulfilled, whose expectations, and especially I love the statement that when that Krishna's fulfillment of our expectations will always be extraordinarily superbly beyond anything that we could ever actually expect. And of course, in the material world, it's the opposite. But we have this fulfillment of his expectations, but then we have the contrast with the gopis and their expectation, because they also are having their expectation. And their expectation is also, unfortunately, going to exceed. I mean, like you just were mentioning, Krishna is saying, I'll return. But in their minds, it's just even one moment gone is like the eternity. So that contrast of expectations, one which is fulfilled in such wonderful joy, and the other, and both by the same event, Hare Krishna.
Just the point that you touched on briefly, that Lord Chaitanya came to absorb himself in these such experiences as his devotees are undergoing.
In the overall pastime and all of pastimes of Krishna and his devotees, whether it's in Bomalila, Goloka Vrindavan, there's constantly this wavering of Vipralamba and Sambhog. And between those two, there's always high expectations. And that expectation goes beyond what we can ever imagine, but then the devotee in his consciousness has to understand it could be taken away any time. And this takes place when we look at the journey of Akrura, which, as it is told in the Bhagavatam, it goes really through a whole chapter and more than one chapter. We see it takes place every day when Krishna leaves the house, and it's the same thing that goes on with Mother Yashoda. And it's the same thing that takes place when the cowherd boys go to sleep and Krishna goes out with the gopis. And it's the same thing that takes place when Krishna is out in the forest and the gopis are waiting for him. So there's always this expectation, when will I see Krishna? What is my qualification to see Krishna? What will happen when we see Krishna? And the acharyas comment that even though you may be with Krishna constantly, every time you see Krishna, every time it's for the first time, every time it's ever fresh, every time it's new.
Apurvata in the term is, right? Never before seen.
Never before seen.
Never before seen. And I think that point is also good, that that consciousness of the expectation of seeing Krishna doesn't end when you're there. It's part of the consciousness of the resonance of Vrindavan.
I was also reminded as a parallel pastime, the pastime of Gopakumar, and how he makes his way all the way to Goloka, all the way until he actually finds himself face to face with Krishna at long last.
Yeah, thank you. Hare Krishna.
You packed an awful lot into that class. I was thinking about the two doubts. Is it true? And can I succeed? And I was thinking that my doubt about whether or not I can succeed, which arises when I go before the deity and do my duty to reveal my heart to Krishna, and I think about what is the actual condition of my heart compared to the condition of the hearts of Akrura and the gopis. The amount of my doubt about whether or not I can succeed is directly proportionate to whether or not I believe it is true that the very act of revealing my heart will induce Krishna to purify that heart.
Doubt's an interesting thing. It's not that you have doubt. There's more doubts that it's not true. You know, our doubts isn't true, but there's so many doubts, you know, that it is true. And sometimes at the end now, it's such a deep subject that even like Pancharatna or whatever he said, it's a whole class in itself to figure it out. But you go to which point to do?
You were saying that the very goal of life for all beings is the ecstasy of Akrura and the ecstasy of the gopis. But Akrura gets Krishna. It's like union with Krishna. And the gopis become separated from Krishna. And it's actually a greater ecstasy. So...
Thank you, Maharaj, for your katha, so inspiring. Thank you, all devotees. This is just a brief reflection between Gaura Lila and Krishna Lila, that the same personality that takes Krishna out of Vrindavan is the same personality that takes Nimai out of Nadia, Keshava Bharati, and Akrura. So I just find this an interesting link between your classes and Madhavananda's classes.
Yeah, Keshava Bharati
in Gaura Lila, it's Krishna Lila, Akrura, Keshava Bharati.
Hi, Hare Krishna. I'm so sorry for my voice. Thank you so much, Maharaj, for your lecture. So I really like two thoughts. First one, that we don't hear instruction what we don't like.
We don't hear what we don't like.
Yeah, right. So we kind of like it, but we don't like to accept that. So I thought that, when you're a baby, you can accept your mother's shelter with her hands. But when we grow up, it's so hard, you know, to be surrendered because we already stuck, we already had a lot of problems and kind of our hearts become a little bit hard, right? And it's so hard to surrender by Krishna. Like, can you? Maybe I can control it by myself, you know, so... So I thought that it's really nice when we can be a little bit like child, silly and weak, you know, and maybe it can help us more to be surrendered. So also I really like this one about love and separation. I think that sometimes we like to imitate it, you know, we like to do it by ourselves. But I heard, when I listened to you, I realized that gopis, they didn't do this with themselves, by themselves. They just got this in their lives. And it's just like, oh my God, we have so many problems. And actually, like, in my own life, it's really reputation is nothing for me, because I can lost my job, I can lost my family respect, I can lost my friends, but it's so nice to have Krishna, still have Krishna in my life, you know? Yeah, so also thank you so much, because it's the last day, so I want to just say thank you for everyone. Hare Krishna.
I really like the point of what you desire in relationship with Krishna, you will get if you're sincere. That was very wonderful. That some people are like, oh, am I going to be a coward boy? I don't want to be a grass, or some silly kind of comments, like new people maybe. But then that thing that whatever you aspire for, that's naturally going to be what will happen. That's very inspiring.
Okay. I guess... Does anybody? Oh, so I think this evening's program will just have a kind of a closing ceremony where we will get to share some realizations. We'll have some kirtan, maybe a little thought on taking the retreat home, and then maybe there's some kirtan, very beautiful kirtan, and you can visit the places in your mind and share the things that you remember the most, not just the things that you remember in terms of the visual, but how you felt. That's also important. We'll do something, and we'll wind it up. And then I think maybe this evening, we'll end the kirtan a little bit earlier, because everybody's going tomorrow, and I thought maybe from... like 6 to 7:30, maybe we can have a Kinchana Krishna, or they could really have a nice kirtan and then end with Krishna Kshetra march, maybe for a half hour having kirtan. And if we all can, that last activity, all join in the kirtan together, it'd be a great way to... I know that, but Radha Charan may not have the energy. If he wants to, he could lead tonight. We'll speak to him. What? No, he's not feeling well. Okay, there's a thank you, because after I made the announcement yesterday, several people came forward with the donations, and we now at least covered our costs, so we can continue to extend ourselves and help people, a lot of the people, not quite a few of the people here we're able to help. Come here and et cetera, enjoy the festival. This morning till 10 a.m. is the last chance to order Jagannath Mahaprasad with Jagannath Priya. We had several devotees questioning the authenticity of the Jagannath Prasadam, Kaja that Shesha brought, and some even refused to take it. Shesha Dev was very distressed. We did not get the chance to make an announcement during the day when everyone would have been there. But we found out about 2 p.m. that there are no more leaf boxes available for our order yesterday. Since the cyclone uprooted whole forest in Orissa last May, there's been a shortage of leaf plate boxes. We ordered some boxes last night, so they should be available today. And Sesha will try to get some extra leaf boxes today, though there's no guarantee that he can. So that was the biggest problem of the retreat. So I think we did... The biggest problem was the leaf box. This was like ending the culmination of the biggest problem. But, okay, it's 8:54. Let's start the kirtan. The kirtan here is started 10 to 10. We want to get it early so we can still get back at the same time. We're going to the Gambira. Yeah. The evening program, thank you, will be down in the courtyard. Okay, and Amala Vaishnav can help you set up. Okay, 4:30. Should we make it 4:30 or 5? Okay, 4:30. We'll keep our schedule. Srila Prabhupada ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Nitai go premanande. Thank you.
reason.